big chunk of Finney's Wake is that. You know, no explanation of what the argument's about. The 60 languages
so
all it, collage
so,
there.
So, Bob, mm-hmm. is it? Could I say that in a idiot form? Is it idiot form? Private person? No, stupid person form. Could Trump
yeah, that's
be
an
imitating?
Idiot. An idiot is a
could
private
Trump
person.
Be imitating Finnegan's Wake in a dumbed down 21st century
yeah.
kind of way?
That's what I said. My first statement about him after he became president is that he was a shaman, a modern shaman, using the Twitter environment to go around the establishment. And no president had ever had that opportunity.
And
to
a literate person, to a literate person, it looks stupid and dumbed down.
Yeah.
I don't want to use the word idiot here.
He violates TV post-literate integrities. He violates everything. And he's still, you know, the popular appeal, the polls say 50%. You know, he's still up there, even though he may be shot by tomorrow. And all removed by tomorrow, the way you hear the news the last few days.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
What's his name? Comey's going. Yeah. Comey's having a big tantrum. And he's this guy, he smells. He has orange skin.
He's turned. He's gone with the establishment. He's over. It's all over now. Trump's turned. They got him, Bob. They got him according to the last couple weeks. It's all over.
Right. And they say, and what does Trump respond? He said, call me slime ball. Call him a slime ball. You have to realize this is probably the young kids. They live in this yelling back at each other, you know, reality, the chip party. But look, fucking Obama or Kennedy, nobody called a journalist or anybody a slime ball, for fuck's sake. I mean, Trump is like out of the box. He's like acting like it's his own little game. He's not following anybody's rules.
Yeah, and shortly, you know, after the election or in the months after the election and the first, you always look at the first 90 days of any first president and see what changes. I was thrilled. The only word I could say was thrilled. And what I'm thrilled by is his imitation of everything that's happening. It's that dumbed down version of Finnegan's Wake, and I gotta get over the words dumbed down. So say it again. It's what's Trump doing? He's imitating Finnegan's Wake, but put
with,
it in your words.
Iconic precision. Iconic precision.
Oh, beautiful.
Hear that orgasm, Reiner?
That's not a gasp, Brian. That's an orgasm.
Kind of. That's its own kind of iconic precision.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. There we go. Okay. So, all right. And here's some more notes. It seems reasonable to assume this concept of strategy and influence of his strategy. Very interested in this little episode. These are just notes that I was taking while you and let's see how Thiel's being received. He emphasizes this letter. He emphasizes in his letter his strategy.
That's referring to that letter to Bogolin that you posted recently, Bob.
Yeah. Which has your name on it. On the internet, or how I got it, it says from Brian Taylor. Did you ever see that?
Really?
Yeah, you posted it or something somewhere.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, now put this in the context. Oh, go ahead.
No, but I was going to say, never mind. That's cool, but.
No, take it.
I remember posting the, I copied and pasted that Melville book review, the Melville's Quarrel with God. But I didn't realize I had also posted that Vogelin letter somewhere. But that makes sense because it's a great follow-up to that.
Yeah, same themes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to bring you guys back to putting this in the context of Trump. It seems reasonable to assume this concept of strategy. You know.
Trump, he's doing the four bodies. He has experience in all the bodies. He's post-president, says Ion. He's not a president, so I call him a para-president, communicating to many worlds. And he's doesn't have a goal. He doesn't. He can't realize what he claims he wants to do: make America great again. So he's a coach. He's just trying to keep the iconography of America, the TV body mainly, still alive. And he's always citing statistics. You know, he loves statistics, which people would say, experts come in, well, no, those unemployment's down because of what Obama did 4 years ago. You know, they start arguing over where did it really begin. He doesn't care about those facts. He's like a total fan of a team, and naively celebrating every little game the coach fools people with, or the team does.
He's breaking up pattern recognition. He's breaking up a pattern.
He's a dupe of high school culture. Zappa said, you know, America is a high school. Politics are American high school. He's a high school cheerleader who believes and celebrates any little fucking thing that'll make the team feel confident.
It ignores everything else.
Yeah, he doesn't go into the causes. That's why people say he doesn't know anything, and maybe he doesn't. But if a statistic comes out that the blacks are less unemployed than 5 years ago, he makes a big deal out of it. And it doesn't explain where, why, how it happened. He just says it. Well, who does that? He's like a PR man. He's like Ed McMahon. Any good news about Johnny Carson, he'll use and rub it in our faces. Very superficial.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've read every tweet he's put out since he got in. I make sure I keep up with it. And a lot of it's just him sitting in at the desk. Is that the mystical desk? What do you call that desk?
Resolute?
The Dresden
Resolute.
The Resolute desk, yeah, the mystical desk. He's sitting there at the desk, if that's it, with some, you know, union of hospital workers or local cops. That's his presidency, is him meeting people in the White House and saying he had a fantastic meeting. And then the other part is he happens to look at the news and he sees the New York Times or somebody said something bad about him, so he insults the journalist. So he goes back and forth between insulting the journalist, claiming it's fake news, and the real America goes on with everybody being acknowledged at his court. And he says the word great too much. Everything is great.
Now, and you know times too. Can you know, roughly estimate, are his tweet, is there a period of time during the day that he more regularly tweets?
No,
because he's
don't
been accused of
that.
Tweeting in the middle of the night, you know, tweeting early in the morning.
Know.
And you don't.
Okay. I'm up all night too, and so we're communicating with each other. Four in the morning, I go see what he's telling me.
So you can quote dates back to 1922, but you can't quote.
I never look at
times.
The hours. I don't know if they give the hours. Maybe they do. Do they give the hours?
Yeah, they do. The tweets
account?
Do.
Okay, but I can't figure that out because it's 6 hours backwards where we are.
Yeah, and, it's not years and dates, days.
Yeah, no, maybe I'll start looking for that. I'll try to figure out the timing of these things. But I associate them with the day. You know, he has a picture of himself with his meeting with some union or something, and it goes out right away. His management does that. I just consider it a day culture. Maybe the attacks on journalists is at midnight or 2 a.m.
Oh, well, I'm just curious about that. I'm curious because he's been accused of. Yeah.
But look, what do you think of that, Reiner? Does Justin Trudeau tweet?
I think everybody tweets now. Trump got everybody tweeting. Nobody tweeted on Capitol Hill till he got into power, and then now everybody's got a Twitter account.
Wow.
Hilarious.
And,
yeah.
What is Justin? Did you have a style for Justin, or do you even know about it? Pay any attention to it?
I don't pay any attention to either of them much, actually. You know, I have enough
right.
trouble getting from school or in order.
Right. Well, what he's doing a very watered down Mae Brussel. He's trying to teach people. He says, "Now look what they do here. See, well, I'm doing this, and they're criticizing me. But Comey did that, and they won't do nothing on Comey." They don't even notice what Hillary's doing. He's always crudely being like Mae Brussel, exposing the bias from his point of view. So he's trying to educate people to what's going on in the media.
Well, that's the interesting relationship. And, you know, that's what I was kind of picking up on, this dynamic between Thiel and McLuhan during the review of his thesis. I don't know if I have the words right academically, but, you know, did they know what was going on personally between the two of them or not?
They did.
And what? Okay.
No,
so
I mean, Marshall told them. He says, "Don, you're going to explain me to CBC. Don't explain me. We need mystery. I know too much. Do not do it." I mean, he's conspiring with Don. You know, he's saying, "Don, lie. Leave stuff out."
And so the critique or criticism that he had during the thesis was genuine or teasing?
No. Look, he had to appear, he had to hide the fact that Don was using Marshall's material. So he acted like he was, "Oh, wait, where are you getting these nutty fucking ideas, Don? This is ridiculous. This is not true."
So he was successful.
You know, and he refuted what Don said because he didn't want Woodhouse, that's his name, I looked it up, Woodhouse, the head of the fucking university almost, the English department, this old fuddy-duddy guy, he didn't want Woodhouse to recognize that it was McLuhan's ideas.
Wow.
Because Woodhouse didn't like McLuhan.
That's Cohen and Trump. It's okay, so
yeah.
I'm not, but yeah, it's that...
You know, when Cohen had his funeral, Trump showed up but stood in the back of the room. He almost didn't want to be associated with Cohen, but he had to come to the funeral. That's like Don. Don meets with the McLuhans behind the scenes. Like, it's not, okay, so...
When the mafia gives respect. It's the mafia
right.
giving respect.
Right, so McLuhan, he argues with Thiel over the book, but they occasionally bumped into each other. And conferences or places. So they would be civil to each other, you know, talk as if there was no problem after in the 70s. Not that often, but it wasn't this, you know, seething hatred where they refused to talk to each other. No, that was all kind of secret, the resentments.
All they could do was dance on the other guy's toes.
Right, and there's a big reason why there was tension between the McLuhans and Thiels that I cannot say. I do tell people privately what went on, if they deserve it, and I cannot say what that is, but that's a big factor.
Okay, now here comes the other part, because that's the exciting part. If there are people from New Explorations and Marshall McLuhan listening, this is where they got to go to hear the whole answer.
Yes, they must
to
come to
post.
Bob, and they have to be good people. They have to be trustworthy people. They got to keep
incredible.
It confidential. I ain't
and
telling
see,
Mark Stallman. Mark Stallman's not going to get this information.
And I'm the idiot. It's the idiots that get to hear all this, and I'm not even a part of the, you know, this whole.
That's right. You don't even
world.
Know what we're talking about. You
I have no clue. I got about 40% picking up here.
Yeah.
So that's fabulous. It's fabulous. Brian said at 9:14, deep state survival.
Yes. Look at Joyce. Mm-hmm. Thiel likes to say, oh yeah, another thing about Thiel is that he became very active politically on the censorship issue. So it began with the college kids at McGill. He didn't like them being censored. And he was a consultant to the government on censorship issues. He was very involved in content bullshit. I mean, that's McLuhan never entered into arguments over censorship. He didn't care. Content wasn't important. Censor all you want. But Thiel went the content route, at least as a government advisor, and was an expert on those sort of leaning towards not so much censorship. I guess the liberal view, relax and allow.
But you would say that Thiel explored the details that McLuhan
he went. Didn't. He did what McLuhan didn't do. He didn't. He was the, if you put a negative spin on it, he was the bureaucrat who picked up the scraps of paper that McLuhan was tossing around, and he put them into order and said, oh, yeah, this is page 14 of Finnegan's Wake, you know. He did the content analysis. He was concerned about universities. He wasn't saying it was the end of the Western world. He wasn't saying you can't have Christianity anymore without the alphabet. So
say that so, over again. Just you can't have Christianity anymore without the alphabet.
Yeah, when the phonetic alphabet is not conditioning people, you can't be a Christian. He said you can't have morals. You can't have ethics under electronic conditions.
So
the deal was going around trying to have ethics or preserve something. As a Joycean anarchist, he still had his invested in something.
He had a healthy attitude toward order.
Yes, you know what he says in yeah. What is it that you're quoting, Lewis? The healthy passion for order. Is that what it was? An anarchist with a healthy passion for order.
Yeah.
Thiel was Lewis, but the. Okay, what was I just going to say? I'm going to tell you something. Stumbled censorship. Oh, yeah. In his book, okay, he describes he says, in general, McLuhan acted out the syndrome and symptoms of changes that people were going through. He doesn't give McLuhan credit for being a detached actor. McLuhan actually believed in what his issues were through the years, that he did become too worried about this or too worried about that. And he thought the Western world was being wiped out. And Thiel, the balanced moderate, said, no, we're still here. Kids are still going to college. They're not doing bullshit sessions. They're still taking tests. They're still learning the alphabet. You know, he takes that view of McLuhan. Now, McLuhan was an emotional artist who panicked and expressed accurately what was going on. Through his own syndromes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like Thiel has the superiority complex. He's looking at McLuhan as as the neurotic kid allergic to electric changes.
Mm. Well, that's the norm. You've described any number of great thinkers that
they're extra sensitive.
Yes.
And so Don's saying, I don't want to be a sensitive artist. I'm the detective. I'm watching who's the criminal here and who's doing what to who. I'm watching who's being naughty nice. He's not. Okay. Here's another point. Several times in his books, he'll take like a whole page almost, and you read it on page 25, and then it shows up on 373. The same fucking words, the same paragraphs. It's like a misprint. Something from the earlier book is totally repeated word for word in the later, almost out of context. And I said, why is that happening? Why'd you do that? Or why is that a mistake? He said, no, that's me being a manipian. He purposely had sections repeat themselves word for word as if he had forgotten that he already said it.
So that was his idea of
that's how far the university president did a little nod to the manipulative satire, just a little one, sort of hidden away so he doesn't get fired. He took a smoke of marijuana, on page 305.
You bring that up. He's just riding along, and then I'll just drop this paragraph in here from
yeah,
this book over here.
He repeats.
Just to give people a little sense of deja vu.
Yeah, he wants to see if they're reading. I showed that I was a careful reader, a close reader. I noticed it. To my credit.
You won.
So, but see, look, who, What academic in 1970, might even be written in late 69, is talking about Frank Zappa and the Muslim invention, for fuck's sake?
Yeah, that's beautiful, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And putting him in there as equal, doing the same thing as McLuhan, which is exactly what Frank did. And that's why I have Zappa in there in the McLuhan Quadrant. He was a next-generation version of Zappa, educating people to the avant-garde effects in music history.
And then in the end, mm-hmm. he's badly abused by bad medicine and needlessly
Yeah, by everybody. Yeah, most manipians are assassinated. They don't get away with it. Carol and I are the first manipians to have lived this long.
Oh, I'm so glad I know you two. I'm just so glad I know you two. I can apply all of this in my own little idiot way personally. I can apply it all.
And idiot means private person. Idiot means private, literate person.
Yep.
That's a definition from McLuhan's Verbi Vocal Visual Explorations.
Yep.
In Greek, it meant private person. So if I am calling you an idiot, I'm complimenting you.
Right.
Okay, Reiner, does this give you any other thoughts? Fit Michael Snow into this, or John Oswald, or your brother.
They're all
and related to Trump.
Relate to McLuhan, the deal.
They're all mixing media, so in that sense, they're all connected through their sense of interplay, right? So,
They're redoing McLuhan.
Most of them are redoing McLuhan, for sure, yeah. I would say, at least.
Is your brother a manipian?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I never met him, but I heard about him.
Yeah, no, he sends up just about everything. I mean, he's even gone through major tomes by different writers and took white out and eradicated language to create his own language within the context of the forms of the book, which, you know, subverts the book and changes it into a different interpretation, which had nothing to do with the original text whatsoever, but kind of changes it into a. It's kind of.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a
beautiful. Does he make these privately? Does he display this in any galleries?
No, never. Never.
Code.
Yeah, you know what he is? You know, James Joyce had his buddy, who's Cranley in The Portrait of the Artist, who's based on.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. He's the guy who did the cryptography that was sold to the American military before World War II. And he lived at 7 Eccles Street, Bloom's address. This guy, you can look at the War and Peace and Gold Village. It's the first page inside. There's a note on this guy. Because Joyce describes thinning his wake, and he uses the contraption that Cranley invented. He quotes the contraption that Cranley patented.
Yeah.
But Cranley never left Dublin. He stayed in his home, did this secret military stuff, and never left where he grew up. Stayed in Dublin, didn't go anywhere, apparently, whereas Joyce traveled around the world. So Reiner travels around the world, and his brother stays home and never leaves and makes his art for himself.
Yeah, and it's basically like Bell and Baldwin, too. And Baldwin was in the background and behind everything that Bell did, right? And much like, Tesla was the inventor and Edison was the businessman. I mean, all of those kind of scenarios exist, these kind of dualities that are on one level, in some sense, they're almost manipulant, just because they subvert each other, yet they also bring attention to each other at the same time. It's bizarre.
Yeah, and that's Shem and Sean in Finney's Wake.
Yeah.
You're Sean,
yeah,
you go out, and you're involved with civilization, concerned about the next generation, what they know of art history, and your brother sitting home smearing shit over himself, which is what Shem did.
Which Shem
excrement.
Did. Well, there you go. I mean... That's an
Did he ever get married or anything? Is he just an isolated
married.
Guy? Oh,
no,
okay.
Married. He inherited a family at the same time. So, yeah.
Right. He didn't cause the kids.
No, no. He was much smarter than that.
God.
Well, that's a great
for all the parents out there.
Well, there's where McLuhan, he's there on Telescope in '67. watching Mary prepare for her wedding in December 66, and he's being filmed for CBC's telescope, and that's when he quotes Ulysses, one of the discussions in the library or in the newspaper office that Stephen Dedalus is part of, where they talk about whether men have any role in pregnancy. And McLuhan, you know what? I've done this before, Brian, right? You've heard this.
Yep.
He says, right there, William Irwin Thompson rejected McLuhan because of this scene. He says, McLuhan is there, hogging the camera from Mary, who's displaying her new wedding dress as her mother and friends are fussing about her. And McLuhan's there saying to the camera, you know, fatherhood is an odd thing. It's brief, whereas pregnancy is drawn out, you know, over a long span of time, and all the focus is on the pregnancy. No mention of the man. No, it's just too brief. And he's talking about conception.
Yeah.
Of course.
The contribution.
Right. Now, here's how you make a metaphor out of it. Here's how you apply it to media.
Go ahead.
We're
making deposits. That's all we do. We're the bankers.
We're passing in the night. Not significant. Yeah. So the metaphor is, pre-literate societies went on for thousands of years because they didn't have literacy disrupting it and making inventions and causing chaos. And the invention period, the Gutenberg phase, is left hemisphere patriarchal men. So literacy, right, McLuhan said, will be a passing phase, and we'll move into this electric eternity we're moving into, which is almost ionic. We're moving into this electronic thing where we're going to retrieve long time-based societies rather than space-based societies. Like Rome was space-based. They tried to conquer horizontally space, and they collapse. But the Babylon and the rest of the societies or aboriginal societies, they go on for eons because they don't have anything interfere and disrupt them. And we're going to move into that electrically. So the matriarchy, the right hemisphere, non-left hemisphere, pre- and post-Gutenberg, are female. They're long and stretched out. Whereas the patriarchy would just be this brief moment of a mere 500 years of chaos, you know, very brief. That's how you extrapolate what he was saying.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit, a little bit of what Ursula Franklin talked about when she talked about the difference between men and women. She said, well, you know, men are trained to, you know, maximize gain at all costs, which is the business world, the world outside of the home. And then the home women would have been trained traditionally to minimize disaster. So who would you want to go into detente with? was her question to the audience when I heard her talk.
Well, who's Ursula Franklin? Who's that?
She was a U of T interested in physics, technology, but also information. She was a Quaker who had some really interesting ideas. In fact, I definitely influenced by McLuhan as well, but I think ultimately somebody that is very underrated.
Oh, she's a professor at the University of Toronto.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's where she's
wrong, though, Reiner. She's taken the industrial bias. It's only in the industrial phase that the men are away from home and the women are at home.
Yeah, I didn't give you that context because I figured you understood that. But yeah, she would have put it in that context herself. But at the same time, for people to understand when they talk about difference between the genders, that was one example she gave in under technological conditions. You know,
right.
So I thought
it
was interesting.
The men were away and destructive, and women were protective dealing with
and
the effects of tragedy.
So which one would give you the longer stretched out phenomenon like pregnancy, right? I mean, clearly that one, right? So
yeah, the nurturing, the protective.
Precisely, yeah. Anyway, I thought it was worth mentioning.
Okay, so William Irwin Thompson sees McLuhan ignoring his daughter and hogging the camera. He said, this guy's a megalomaniac. I reject him. So Thompson, then 30 years later, when he met me and I got him back into McLuhan, and then he apologized for rejecting McLuhan in his book, Coming into Being, he got corrected. But, you know, he emotionally rejected the Catholic scene in Toronto when he was teaching at York, and then started his own commune in Long Island, which then became the Lindisfarne Association. And he actually developed media analysis beyond McLuhan. He's after McLuhan in my chart. He actually takes McLuhan he actually develops McLuhan and makes it more attainable, identifiable for the me generation of the 70s and the new age fads. That's what he does.
He made McLuhan communal. Or tried, right?
He makes McLuhan communal? No. He satirized the trends and fads that McLuhan couldn't do in the 70s. He wasn't up on that stuff. And at one point somewhere in the 70s, Thompson gave a talk, probably in New York City, and he was sort of heckled in the question period about, this is all a replay of McLuhan. You know who it was? Terry McLuhan.
Oh, shit.
She recognized the McLuhan background to Thompson. And she's the,
right.
she's the literate one, the filmmaker one. She lives in New York City, Mary's twin sister. But she called him out.
Nice.
And nice. Let me see. And yet she herself, in her interviews, when her movies came out and her books, always said, I do not want to be identified with my father's work. She really always expressed her distance from what he had done. She called out the guy. When push comes to shove, she...
Makes sense.
Yeah, I don't blame her. I mean, ultimately, if you want to have your own life, you got to kind of detach yourself, right? So from...
She tried to nail me. She had, a New York playwright did a play on McLuhan in 1994, and it won an Obie, the actor playing McLuhan. But I met Ann Bogart, maybe that was her name, and I met her somewhere before the play, and I told her I had McLuhan archives and all this stuff, and I'd done stuff with McLuhan. So she brought me in to educate the cast members, all these young kids who didn't really know anything about McLuhan, even though the play was about McLuhan. So I showed them footage of McLuhan, described him, whatever, in some way, and gave the guy who played McLuhan, I guess, a good insider, and he went on and won an Obie. I could claim. I gave him the stuff he needed to get an idea of what McLuhan was. So at the play of premiere, I went to it, and there was Terry. So I went over. Let me see. I don't think I'd ever met Terry before. I knew her sister well, Mary. But anyways, I introduced myself to Terry. And so we sat near each other during the play. And then after, we all went out to dinner. And Ted Carpenter was supposed to come, but he never showed up. But his wife, the wealthy family that runs DIA, what do they call Adelaide Demoneal? You ever heard it? You know DIA, D-I-A.
Yeah, the Demoneal family from Texas, yeah.
Yeah, Carpenter married one of the daughters. And if anybody wants to look it up, it's very interesting. Google Vanity Fair, Demoneal, and DIA, and you'll read about the battles among the siblings in the Demoneal family over who runs the art world. And they created Warhol. They created everybody. They were the... Okay, they were the Baldwin behind Bell in the art world.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And her husband.
Needless to say, they come from, you know, their family's history is French. It's not American, right? So they have a whole other.
Well, they're the Schlumberger, the famous oil company Schlumberger.
Yep.
And she married a French guy, Mr. Demoneal, and then they moved to Texas. And then he is charged with being involved in killing Kennedy.
Yes, wow.
Yeah, Cecil, I think his name was Cecil. He is in the Warren Commission. He was interviewed and said, well, you're a suspicious guy. You hang out here in Dallas and Houston. And I can't remember what the details were, but and he died shortly after in 73. But so that's what Ted married into. And so what was I telling you about that? Okay, the Demoneals. Ted's wife came. And there was a guy from TV Guide, Neil somebody, so he was a guest of Terry, so the TV Guide corporate world, Terry knew. And then there was this filmmaker guy who went to UCLA Film School, whatever it was out there, with David Lynch. So he sat beside me. So I got a lot of interesting stories about David Lynch and his life as a student with David Lynch in film school. Well, in the middle of the dinner, I'm on the opposite side of the table, and I'm just talking with the people around me. All of a sudden, Terry says, so, Bob, what is this Bob Dobbs stuff?
Whoa.
What is this Bob Dobbs stuff? And I said,
That's great. She was listening to you?
She was spying. She was spying on me. And she, so she wondered if in this, you know, this grand crowd, or what are you, these elite New Yorkers, what would Bob say? And so I said, Terry, that's not something to be discussed at a nice dinner.
Nice.
Very good.
Yeah, and so that was that. And then later, I was talking about McLuhan being a manipulative satirist, and I might have said, you know, nobody knows he's a manipulative. And Terry goes, everybody knows he's a manipulative. And I said, not in Nova Scotia. And she said, yeah, you're right about that.
That's interesting. That's a good one.
Yeah, New Yorkers. Nobody said a word. Nobody said a word. Everybody just watched this. What's going on here? You know? But the I thought it was interesting that she said that a lot of people know he's a manipulative. Who? Her circle? She tells everybody? Does she know what it means? I don't know. She doesn't even want to be associated with McLuhan.
Well, that's what she says.
Right. But she's but she would show up at every McLuhan Award thing that the Pamela Wallin ran, and when she was ambassador to New York City or whatever her role was, at the consulate. Every year they would put on a McLuhan award. And people like Tom Wolfe got one, Jerry Brown, governor of California, the guy who invented the mouse or a part of the mouse, Alan Kay, David Byrne of Talking Heads, the woman, Sherry Turkle or Kirkle, who did the early book as a Harvard prof or something on the second self, on the digital body. She called it Our Second Selves or My Second Self or Your Second Self. Everyone, every year, Terry would be there representing the McLuhan family.
Hmm. That's cool.
Well, yeah.
So
she does take ownership.
Well,
that's good.
What?
She does take ownership.
That's interesting that...
What'd you say, Reiner? Sorry, I drowned it out.
No, just nothing important. Go ahead, Brian.
Just that's interesting that one of the McLuhan Award recipients, as far as I know, is a card-carrying or officially associated with the Church of the Subgenius. David Byrne was, to some extent. Maybe it was him that... asked her about, like, this, what about that Bob Dobbs guy?
Well,
I don't know, whatever, about the timeline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what, so I don't know if Terry noticed it. I assume she did. But I only missed Jerry Brown. I think I was at every other one. But I was always the first person to get up in the question period and point out something or reveal that they didn't know something about McLuhan. That was my job.
Uh-huh.
Right, and so, here's your award, and now here's a slap.
Yeah, here's the review. Your talk was lousy. Like I remember asking David Byrne, so what do you make of the tetrad? What's that? What's the tetrad?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the Toronto filmmaker Adam Egoyan, he got the award. But he got snowed in at Toronto, and he had to be part of the ceremony through Skype. You know, he came in by screen, Adam Egoyan. And
what did you ask him?
I don't remember, but I did something because he didn't do Sex, Lies, and Videotape. That was Soderbergh.
No.
But, So because I talked about Sex, Lies, and Videotape on CKLN when it came out, a Toronto Life journalist, heard that. He'd been listening to me, and he was amazed that when he saw the movie, fuck, what Bob talks about makes sense. And so he interviewed me and for the This magazine. Remember that magazine? This magazine?
Oh, yeah. You bet.
And so I'm in it. But in it, I'm quoted as saying, he brings up Adam Egoyan. I said, Adam Egoyan gets all his stuff from me. I'm the hidden thought guy behind Adam and Gordon. Okay? And so in the article, Adam and Gordon, you know, this guy was Robert somebody. He says, oh, of course, I checked with Adam, and he said, I never heard of the guy. I don't know who you're talking about.
Well, of course, he would say that.
So it's right in the article. There's also De Kirchhoff says, Bob Dobbs, he eats, drinks, sleeps McLuhan. That's what he said about me. I eat, drink, sleep. And so Adam McGoyan, Derek, I don't know if there's any other comments from anybody, but I singled them out. I drew them out. You know, I got my effect. I made the journalist note. I made an absurd statement about McGoyan just so to bring it into the article.
That's funny.
Yeah, like total it. Manipian Bob. I'm managing my media image. The article says, it opens up saying, on Wednesday night, this guy, Bob Dobbs, rules the airwaves in Toronto, which is entirely fucking true. Cool. That's crazy. Who the hell listened to CKLN?
I did.
Yeah, a few people did, but it was always a conspiracy against me. Nobody would admit that they were all listening to me.
That's because they thought you were insane.
That's right. Yeah, they changed their name while they were listening to me.
That was your best cover, man. That was the best thing.
Would you say that was my best cover?
Yeah, it was the best cover, man. Best guy, you know, hiding in full sight, right?
Okay.
Yeah, no one thinks Bob is insane these days.
No. Now anymore. They're wondering,
not,
what do we do with him?
Not now. No, and the other thing.
Yeah, now it's like, oh my God, he's right. What do we do with this guy? This elephant in the room.
Well, Bobby, you went on for 2.5 fucking hours on Seal. How's anybody going to cope with that or try to compete with you on that? Of course, nobody.
Now, here's what's neat. Here's what's neat is that Richard Altman, known as Zarvox Altman on the Facebook page, he did a really good documentary on McLuhan in Winnipeg, you know, a couple months ago. He's now doing part two. And he told me a couple months ago, he says, Bob, in the end, they all got to deal with you. And so I'm in this fucking documentary. The first time the McLuhan world acknowledges me, he puts me in there doing something. I don't know what he has me doing, but...
bam!
Yeah,
fabulous.
Finally, they will. They are going to get. You know, Nelson used to run around in the '80s, and we'll end with this because we got to go to Carolyn. He's saying in the '80s, Zingroni, De Kirchhoff, Eric—they're all fucking losers. This center wouldn't be doing something if they just gave you the directorship, Bob.
It's true.
Yes, but I never had a PhD.
Yeah.
No, I know. Well, that's
a really good statement, though.
Yeah,
I'm one of the only ones in my department without any of that stuff. So it's great, you know. Some of us can sneak.
What'd you say? You're the only one
I'm the only one in my department at the University in Buffalo without a graduate degree. So some of us can sneak in regardless.
Right. Well, you know, you're from the Club 22. All Club 22 people infiltrate.
Absolutely. I've been working it for 18 years.
Yes, I don't know if it's true, but I discuss with you when you were offered the job whether to do the job? Did you remember us talking about it?
You said, here's your chance for slack, dude. Don't mess it up.
I told you, compromise. Be a hypocrite. Lie. Go take it.
Absolutely. And now everybody comes to me for all the advice. I mean, I'm the group counselor. I do, like, now I'm the, you know, institutional history, and everybody wants to talk to me, and it's hilarious. And I give everybody my opinion, and most of it's Manipian.
All right, so welcome to Wyndham Lewis's world. You've now replayed Wyndham Lewis.
I think that was
okay. Wise. Yeah, so we'll end on that point. We're now going to go into actual McLuhan scholarship. With Carolyn, who's become a devotee of a book, a very good book on McLuhan by Elena Lamberti called Marshall McLuhan's Mosaic.
Oh, I'm going to order that one. I just saw that online. I was looking on that this evening when I was looking for stuff on Thiel.
Yeah, no, really. You want to read that book. I recommend it. It's a good introduction to McLuhan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think I'll – so you're still there, Brian? You can stay as long as you're on the line here, right? Maybe Brian hung up. Okay. So, Reiner, I'm going to mute you, mute Gene, and everybody, so we can have quiet for Carolyn. So, looking at the chat line, which I haven't looked at, oh, crypto's on there. a lot of interesting statements by crypto, but we'll have to do those later. Crypto showed up. He said, I finally made it. I'm ready for class. And he's down in Portland. Okay, Carolyn.
You get the book?
Oh, yeah, I got to get the book. Geez. So talk about something else for a second while
I'll
get the book.
I'll just talk a little general. I won't start quoting, but get the book.